The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Just not going to get into anything that's related to Hunter Biden. He's a private citizen. I would refer you to his representatives. Just don't have anything to share on that.
There is no evidence of any wrongdoing by the president. And Mr. McCarthy knows that. This is all everything in upside down because the former president, who was so corrupt and crude and base, engaged in such criminal activity. Now we're going to try to deflect.
I think that there is almost a panic setting in with the media. They all want to move on because the alternative is to recognize one of the most significant corruption scandals in modern history. But it's something that the media played a role in suppressing. So they want everyone to move on, but that's just not going to happen. The evidence is mounting. And you had these two whistleblowers testify in Congress, and you'll notice the Democratic members asked very little about their specific allegations. And it's because they have been reduced in the amount of maneuvering room by this evidence. They didn't want to trip any wires. When one of them, Representative Dan Goldman from New York, tried, he ended up demolishing the Biden defense in less than 5 minutes. He got the witness to confirm that Joe Biden did, in fact, speak to his son about business dealings. They're all in a position that they're hoping this will move on, but the public and more importantly these committees are just not moving on.
Finally, well, you can see why they're trying to ignore it. The morning brief that went out from us today, Richard, in that brief talks about how the New York Times has, you know, stories about Melania's daily habits. It's got stories about the summer heat, but there's very little about all of these crimes that are being exposed. Hunter going off to court today, KJP saying there that she's not going to say anything about him because, well, he's a private citizen. Oh, a private citizen that happens to live in the White House and that goes off to court with, what, a 10-car entourage, all the Secret Service? He's just an ordinary citizen. Go ask him about all of his troubles. It's looking like the plea deal is blowing up today as well. Lots and lots to get to on today's show. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. You can get to the live video stream of this show at trumpetdaily.com. Just go to trumpetdaily.com. You can watch every weekday morning at 11 a.m. in the central time zone of the United States. That would be noon on the East Coast and 9 a.m. out West. You can also get the live stream at our Rumble channel. Just search for The Trumpet Daily, and you can watch live there every day, or you can watch it on demand, just like you can with our website. As I say, Richard Palmer sends out the morning brief, and he alluded to the brief that we sent out last night as well, where we wrote that God is exposing this. God is exposing us, and as much as the media, the regime media, would like for this story to just go away, more and more is being exposed. I mean, the Republicans filed an amicus brief in this court where Hunter appeared this morning, and one of his attorneys, I guess, impersonated a Republican that helped put together that brief to add to. They're basically just wanting to add evidence. Look, this plea deal is bogus, and there's all these other crimes that are being exposed, and the judge needs to be made aware of this. So they file the amicus brief. Hunter's attorney then calls the court clerk and says, hey, can you get that amicus brief and some of those details that they're putting in? Can you just strike that from the record, remove that from the court? And pretended to be a Republican in Congress. So the judge yesterday said, show me why I shouldn't be slapping sanctions on the Biden legal team. So dishonest. I mean, blatantly lying to the court and then getting exposed for these lies. This is from Maria Bartiromo's show, clip six.
What about this plea deal and the fact that I don't understand how the IRS could prosecute not paying your taxes on income, but not investigate where the income is coming from? And we've got the whistleblower testimony. We've got these bank records from the House Oversight Committee, yep, which clearly indicate 20 shell companies, money from foreigners going to these shell companies, eventually distributed to the Biden family members. How do you ignore that?
It's incomprehensible. And when you consider that some of the benefits, and this is the real rub, as we all know, thanks to the whistleblower investigation, if this is followed through to its logical end, we all know where it's going to terminate. That's how high the stakes are, because it's all going to lead to the White House.
Yeah, the plea deal, in other words, just covers the tippy top of the iceberg. If you're going after him on some misdemeanor charges with respect to paying his taxes, well, what about where that money was coming from? What about all the money that he didn't pay taxes on? And what about the fact that they're coming from these foreign nationals, coming from the CCP? What about the fact that they're going to all of the Biden family members? Everybody's getting paid. Two misdemeanor charges. And I guess the judge is taking exception to however the gun charge is connected to this plea deal. Hopefully she does just blow it up. This is Bartiromo talking about Hunter's team dishonestly impersonating another attorney, clip five.
The judge presiding over Hunter Biden's criminal case is threatening his legal team with sanctions. One of Hunter's lawyers allegedly lied to the clerk's office about who she was, pretending to be a Republican lawyer to remove IRS whistleblower testimony from the record. She calls, makes believe she's on the Republican side, saying, "We decided we want this removed from the record."
She pretended to be someone else. This is from Sundance. It says, Congress filed an amicus brief opposing the plea deal and outlining new evidence discovered by the House Oversight Committee so the judge would have additional background on the deal. The amicus filing was done by GOP lawyer Mr. Theodore Cotilla from the committee. Someone from the defense team, a lawyer later identified as Jessica Bingles from the law firm of Latham & Watkins, then contacted the clerk of the court, falsely claiming to be working with Theodore Cotilla, and asked the clerk to remove the amicus filing. The clerk removed the filing after the lie. So here the judge evidently is putting the brakes on this plea deal. Maybe they still have a chance to reach something by the end of the day. It looks like it might be delayed several weeks. But there's more evidence. This is what the Republicans were basically saying. And they should be doing a lot more. But at least they file this amicus brief to tell the judge, look at what we're uncovering. How does he get a slap on the wrist? How is the case then closed if you come to terms of agreement on this plea deal? And Hunter just walks away from that? This is clip seven. This is Chris Swecker on Jesse Waters' show last night, number seven.
Apparently, his attorneys have about the same ethics standards as he does. And as you pointed out in your monologue, I think this is a clear case for disbarment of the attorney. If the judge lets him off on this, that just falls in line with everything else that's been happening in the Hunter Biden case. But this is egregious, Jesse, and this can't stand.
Is the plea deal now in jeopardy after this phony phone call?
I think the timing of the plea deal is probably in jeopardy. I would not be surprised at all if the judge put off the sentencing. In fact, I think the odds are that we won't see a sentencing tomorrow. The Hunter team obviously feared what was going to go in front of the judge in terms of the whistleblower information, to the point where they were willing to do what they did. So, you know, that means that they had reason to believe she would take it into consideration. So I think this case is changing every day. You know, we're now to the point where I think it's a mountain of evidence against not just Hunter, but Joe as well. And now this.
Like we said yesterday, I mean, here's a case where the walls really and truly are closing in. Only this time, they're closing in for real on the Biden crime family, exposing everyone except for the dear leader, Barack Hussein Obama. He still gets the pass. This Weiss Some on the radical left have made a big point about Weiss being appointed by Donald Trump. But this whole thing, it's rigged through and through. From the Washington Examiner, it says a close associate of the Biden family appears to have spent years working in the Delaware U.S. Attorney's office, including during the months when whistleblowers said the office took up an investigation of Hunter Biden. It says here, Alexander Mackler served as press secretary in Joe Biden's Senate office, as legal counsel in his vice presidential office. He managed the late Beau Biden's successful campaign for Delaware in 2010. It says Mackler served in the Biden-Harris transition team in 2020, helping the Biden administration create the blueprint for its Justice Department. It says here, Mackler also appeared to have a close personal relationship with Hunter Biden. In emails found on Hunter's laptop, Mackler corresponded frequently with Hunter and his business associates, and even referred to Hunter Biden fondly as a brother in October 2018. It says here, Mackler was working under U.S. Attorney David Weiss in the office at the time, according to his LinkedIn page, which lists him as having worked in the U.S. Delaware U.S. Attorney's office from August 2016 to May 2019. He's right there in the office. And Weiss has supposedly has this investigation into Hunter and the Bidens receiving all this money. And they've got one of the best friends of the Biden family. He's right there assisting Weiss. Rigged from the beginning. What a family. I mean, seriously. This other report about the people are being revealed. Buyers that bought Hunter's paintings, in some cases for hundreds of thousands of dollars. It's another, you connect the dots and you see that it's another pay-to-play scheme. You really think Hunter's painting is worth $800,000? This is from the Daily Mail. Hunter Biden's bong-smoking lawyer, there was the image the other day, his lawyer smoking a bong. It was caught on video. And Hunter's showing them, this is what, a week or two after the bag of cocaine just magically appeared in the White House? What a family. Running the United States of America. The dear leader, of course, working behind the scenes to carry out the fundamental transformation of the United States. You know, he's in a little bit of a scandal of his own with the chef there at Martha's Vineyard. I guess the paddle boat accident that everyone wants to move right on from. No curiosity whatsoever. I mean, that doesn't happen every day. The chef for Barack Hussein Obama, he just suddenly and mysteriously drowns? I guess so. Do we just move on from that now? And then you get the headlines from the regime media saying, oh, there's people on social media that are running wild with all kinds of conspiracy theories regarding the chef where there's no evidence whatsoever. I mean, that's your first clue right there, that there's something fishy going on. When the regime media lines up and in unison says, hey, this is a conspiracy over here, and right here over on this side, here's the truth of the matter. And in almost every case, it's the exact opposite. The Daily Mail. Hunter Biden's bong-smoking lawyer, Kevin Morris, who paid the first son's $2 million tax bill, also spent a fortune on his art, along with California Democrat donor Elizabeth Hirsch Naftali, who Joe appointed to prestigious Heritage Board. So she pays this money for Hunter's painting, and then Joe, of course, with the quid pro quo, he returns the favor. Returns the favor and gives her this posh appointment. It says Hunter Biden's paintings have been bought by a top Democratic donor, and the lawyer who was caught smoking a bong during a visit from the first son last week, a bombshell new report has revealed. Have you heard much about this? Is the regime media interested in this? It says here, despite a White House promise that all purchasers' identities would be kept secret, two names have been revealed. Los Angeles-based real estate investor and Democratic donor Elizabeth Hirsch Naftali and Hollywood attorney Kevin Morris. It's also not clear how much Naftali spent on Hunter's art. One single purchaser spent $875,000 on 11 of Hunter's paintings. I guess they really just loved Hunter's paintings. He's like a beginner. And he's selling paintings for hundreds of thousands of dollars? How much have these people made off of this scheme? How many bribes have actually happened? You really are going to you're just going to kind of lump it all into two misdemeanor charges and then a gun charge that just walks away? Walks away like the case, the investigation into the cocaine. Yep, open shut. Can't find no fingerprints. We didn't see anything on the security footage. Nothing. It just appeared there, and now the case is shut. And we want it to go away. That's the way the regime media are treating all the crimes committed by this crime family. Listen to Miranda Devine talking about the significance of Devin Archer's testimony. His testimony's been delayed. Evidently, it looks like it's going to happen on Monday. We'll see how it pans out. But this is clip 8.
And the truth that he has to tell is very damaging to Joe Biden, because, of course, Joe Biden's always maintained that he knew nothing about his son Hunter's overseas business dealings. And we've reported about the numerous meetings, at least a dozen of Hunter's business partners who Joe Biden met, including at a restaurant in Georgetown.
We spent a lot of time on this angle to the story yesterday. The witnesses are coming out of the woodwork. Archer evidently wants to clear his name and tell the truth. Miranda Devine's already reported on what his testimony will be. You've got the House committee finding all the banking connections, the financial connections. What an operation. And then you've got the big guy, the puppet. Listen to him from yesterday. I mean, he's really checking out. It's really sad to see just on a human level that his handlers, his wife, would just let this sort of thing continue. This is clip 2.
We're still feeling the profound loss of the pandemic, as I mentioned, of over 100 people dead. I don't know what the difference between breaking your arm and having a mental breakdown is. It's health. There's no distinction. It's health.
Father Parenthood, do you ever think we'd be talking about banning books in America? Banning history? I'm serious.
I said I'd cure cancer. They looked at me like, why cancer? Because no one thinks we can. That's why, and we can. We'd end the cancer as we know it.
Before I say even what more is on my mind, I'm not going to leave this podium. I'm not going to tell you to whisper to me. I know I'm considered too much of an optimist, but I believe if we keep pushing, we're going to continue to make progress. And we're just getting started.
There he goes again into the horse whisperer mode, ending his speech yesterday with that. Made another statement, too, about... You know, the book ban, I'll get to that in a second. The Dear Leader has made comments on that here recently as well. But listen to Biden talking about how his objective here in trying to ensure that anything goes in school libraries, he's just doing it to try to protect the kids. This is clip 3.
You got to hold these platforms accountable for the national experiment they're conducting on our children for profit. Later this week, senators will debate legislation to protect kids' privacy online, which I've been calling for 2 years. It matters. Pass it, pass it, pass it, pass it, pass it. I really mean it. Think about it. You ever get a chance to look at what your kids are looking at online?
It's not exactly about the books, as I said there, but if you hear him or the Dear Leader talking about protecting your kids, what they mean is that they want your kids. They want to brainwash your kids. They want to fill your kids' minds with propaganda. This is from The American Thinker. It says, Barack Obama congratulated Librarians of America in a Twitter letter recently for allowing books on library shelves that parents of good conscience don't want their children reading. Why is it so important for these people to just put trash and filth in libraries for children? It's all part of the transformation. It says here, he claimed that the books he read when he was young, including those by Mark Twain, helped me develop my own identity, all of which would prove vital as a citizen, as a community organizer, and as a president. That's a quote from Obama. He added, it's no coincidence that these banned books, they're really big on America. Evidently, there's an American book banning going on. These banned books are often written by written by or feature people of color, indigenous people, and members of the LGBTQ community. And this author says here, Obama never misses a chance to stir the pot, having already set race relations back 60 years during his 8 years in the White House. Obama was mocked mercilessly on Twitter. One commentator questioned how books like Gender Queer improved Obama's life. It says further, the rumor is that pedophile Frank Marshall Davis taught Barack Obama more than any books that Obama is encouraging school libraries to stock on their shelves. Here's another subject that was just universally ignored. The fact that Frank Marshall Davis mentored Barack Obama, a young Barack Obama, and he was a communist steeped in pornographic filth. And we talk about this in America Under Attack. We're one of the few to do it, to even bring it up. In the book, my father says, sadly, the press and much of the American public willingly overlooked this startling warning sign. It's as if they were in a stupor, unconcerned that Obama's worldview was shaped by some of the most radical and racist minds in America. And how can you forget the lies that were told with him coming into office in 2009 and how he was just going to unify and bring everyone together? That's exactly the opposite of what community organizers do. Sounds nice. Yeah, organizing the community. It says here, while in Chicago, Obama learned about the Saul Alinsky approach to community organizing. In his book, Rules for Radicals, Alinsky praised Lucifer for being the first radical known to man who rebelled against the establishment and did it so effectively that he at least won his own kingdom. That's a quote from Alinsky. Obama never met Alinsky personally, but he was trained by some of Alinsky's closest followers. He's a disciple of Alinsky. And he's using Alinsky tactics to go after the opposition. I'll come to that in a second. It says here, this is again, America Under Attack. If you don't have a copy of that book, you can get one without cost, obligation, anything. Just call our operators and request your free copy. It's 1-866-930-3024. That's the 800 number if you live in the U.S., Canada, or the Caribbean. It says, Alinsky has been dead for more than a decade, or had been dead for more than a decade when Obama arrived in Chicago, but his legacy was still very much alive. This author wrote about Obama's connection to the man. Here's some excerpts from Rules for Radicals, written back in 1971. It says, it is more important for those of us who want revolutionary change to understand that revolution must be preceded by reformation. It says here, a reformation means that masses of our people have reached the point of disillusionment with past ways and values. They don't know what will work, but they do know that the prevailing system is self-defeating, frustrating, and hopeless. They won't act for change, but won't strongly oppose those who do. The time is then ripe for revolution. This is what they want. This is what it meant, fundamental transformation, from the beginning. And it continues as he carries out his third term, the dear leader. Some of the rules, Alinsky outlined 13 tactics. And again, this you could get this right out of Barack Obama's playbook. These Saul Alinsky tactics. Rule 3, whenever possible, go outside the experience of an opponent. Here you want to cause confusion, fear, and retreat. Rule 4, make opponents live up to their own book of rules. I mean, fine, you could add to that. You know, find the law. Pull it out of the Reconstruction period from the 1860s and 70s and get Trump on that if you have to. Any way you can go about it, just do it. He moved a box. Well, there's got to be some rule that you can get it on for that. Says number 5, ridicule is man's most potent weapon. It's hard to counterattack ridicule, and it infuriates the opposition, which then reacts to your advantage. Rule 8, how about this one? Keep the pressure on. I mean, that one thing about these demon-inspired politicians, leaders, media types, is they are relentless. They are relentless. Were it not for God, I mean, God said it would be exposed. So that's what we're seeing happen. And basically, you just have Republicans with a very thin majority in the House. And that's it. They don't have the Senate. Look at what's in the White House. Look at the regime media. Look at the position, the side that they're continually on. And yet, even still, it's pretty remarkable that God is exposing as much as he's exposing. It's God who's doing it. As I've said so many times before, I mean, the Republicans in Congress, for the most part, are just weak. They certainly don't keep the pressure on, not like the radicals do. There's a few exceptions. At least they're uncovering evidence. At least they're filing an amicus brief. But where are the articles of impeachment? How long is that going to take? Donald Trump was impeached for a phone call. Donald Trump was impeached for what the Bidens did in Ukraine. Rule 9, the threat is more terrifying than the thing itself. The threat, just the threat. Oh, look at how they've used this constantly with the things like the white supremacist boogeyman. Yeah, that's the greatest threat facing the United States. The threat, it's more terrifying than the thing itself. Look at what they blew up January 6 into. It says here, Rule 11, pick the target, freeze it, personalize it, polarize it. According to Alinsky, the main job of the organizer is to bait an opponent into reacting. Quote, the enemy properly goaded and guided into in his reaction will be your major strength. So you've got all these conservatives. They're constantly on defense because of these Saul Alinsky tactics. Constantly playing defense instead of going on offense. The only one that has the courage to even go on somewhat of an offensive or to have an offensive posture is Donald Trump, but he doesn't have power. Not yet. And this is what these communists fear. Donald Trump's return to power. You think about some of these tactics and just the audacity of their lying. To lie right to your face. It really is demonic. It really is sad. It really is. It really is of the devil. This was, we had the bit yesterday on the vicious canine there at the White House, biting all these Secret Service, I think 10 bites in 4 months. It's a dangerous dog. Listen to KJP as she responds to a question about this vicious German Shepherd that's terrorizing people on the White House grounds, number 4.
It seems that Commander Biden has a bit of a biting problem.
So as you all know, the White House complex can be unique and very stressful. And that is something I'm sure you all can understand. It is, as I just said, it is unique and it is stressful for all of us. So you can imagine what it's like for a family pet and family pets more broadly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about this dog that's biting everyone? Well, I mean, it's a stressful environment. Okay. Stress. We'll mark it down to stress for Commander. Listen to Secretary Mayorkas as he responds to facts about the southern border crisis. This is clip 9.
So removals are down under your administration by more than 75%. Meanwhile, in 2019, there were 458,000 border encounters, yet under your policies, we're now up to 2.3 million encounters. That's five times as many. So while encounters were up five times, removals are down by 75%. How do you account for this?
Congressman, a few points. Number one, our approach is working. The number has dropped.
Encounters are up, removals are down. And he just simply says, listen, what we're doing is working. Everything's fine. The guy, the congressman, drops a truth bomb on him. Doesn't faze him. It doesn't faze these liars. I mean, and in some ways, his strategy or his policy, it is working. Because the goal here is for the dear leader to fundamentally transform the United States. They want wide open borders. They want to invite in the whole world. And the whole world is lining up. This is from the Washington Times. Illegal immigrant kids with tuberculosis infections released into 44 states, spreading curses, plagues of pestilence, of disease. Yeah, all over the United States. 44 states? What about all the other sickness? To say nothing of the drugs, the fentanyl, the child sex trafficking. Here's just a simple matter of disease. Opening the way for disease to come right into the United States. There is this American Purpose piece about all the unrest in France. It makes some pretty powerful points in that you basically, in France, you're seeing a nation develop within a nation. And that's what we're seeing in the United States. It destroys nations in the end. Deuteronomy 28, Isaiah 1 bring this out. This is from that article regarding the crisis in France. It talks about all the cars being overturned and the burning that's going on. It says none of this was half as shocking as the few seconds on a cell phone camera that had already become seared into the national conscience here in France and far beyond. A police officer, so they had a shooting. They had their George Floyd moment, I guess. And it led to all this violence, this unrest. But notice what it says later on in this article. The greatest, perhaps mortal danger for France is the vast community that is living within our nation, whose language we do not speak, whose religion we do not embrace, whose customs we do not understand or accept. This is actually a quote that this author is reminding us of from the 1990s. How much worse is it today? It says, in 30 years since that observation, this nation within a nation has grown and metastasized, adding new elements and accents into multiple pockets of frustration, poverty, and lack of opportunity that have implanted themselves all over France. It says, earlier waves of migrants came from French colonies in North Africa and Southern Africa. The latest waves come from different Islamic regions torn by violence or terrorism. So they've got their issues with respect to immigration. Certainly the United States is just opening the southern border to anyone and everyone that wants to come in, not just from Mexico or Central America or South America, all over the world. They're flying to Mexico in some cases and then just walking right in. The lies, the audacity of these lies, these liars. Listen to Leon Panetta. He's one of the ones that signed on to that document in 2020 saying that the Hunter laptop had all the hallmarks of Russian disinformation. Listen to his response. He's asked, do you regret signing that? Here's clip 10.
Oh, 3 years ago, you signed your name to a letter alongside dozens of other intelligence officials saying, that the Hunter Biden email saga had, the letter said, all the classic earmarks of a Russian information operation. You noted that the people who signed it said you didn't know for sure, of course, what it was. But given what we know now, do you wish that you hadn't signed that letter or been involved in it?
No, not at all. I signed that letter for one reason, which was to make the American people aware that the Russians deliberately were engaged in a disinformation campaign in the United States and trying to impact on our election and trying to impact on our ability to have free and fair elections. That's why I signed that letter. And very frankly, I have seen no evidence to the contrary that Russia has not engaged in that kind of disinformation campaign.
Right. But we just haven't seen evidence affirming that either.
So I guess he still believes it. He's seen no evidence to suggest that they didn't interfere. Maybe he maintains that they did it in other ways besides the laptop, but he can't even say I shouldn't have signed that, saying that the laptop was Russian disinformation. He's an election denier, but see, they can deny the results of 2016. If you deny the results of 2020, they'll come after you. look at the New York Times about the charges against the false elector scheme, as they call it, in Michigan. The Michigan Attorney General announced felony charges on Tuesday. Felonies? Not for Hunter. For those that presented alternate electors so that the government, so that Congress could decide. But they're going for even presenting alternate electors. They're going after them for felonies. They want to throw them in jail. It says each of the defendants was charged with 8 felony counts, including forgery and conspiracy to commit forgery on accusation that they had signed documents attesting falsely that they were Michigan's duly elected and qualified electors for president and vice president. Now, in 2016, Democrats, I mean, they essentially attempted the very same thing. They were calling for electors to, even though Donald Trump won, to not vote for Trump. None of them get punished for that sort of thing. Happens all the time on their side. These are some of the headlines from 2016. Fun fact, states decide how to apportion their electors. This is from Chris Hayes at MSNBC. They could give them all to, say, whichever candidate won majority of counties. And we could still turn this around. We could still get Hillary Clinton in there. Norm Eisen, electors should not, cannot choose a man who will violate his oath. Can't choose Trump. This is from George Takei. Russia meddled in our election, says the CIA. Electors, do your jobs. Don't put Trump in. They were all calling for this. But now, the New York Times, this is an action that's got some teeth. 8 felony counts. Lawrence Tribe, the left-wing attorney, says all it will take is just 12% of the 306 Trump electors to vote against a walking, talking, impeachable offense. Before he even got in, they knew. They knew he was going to be impeached. But they didn't even want him to make it in. Here's this famous attorney that's on TV all the time. He's calling for electors to change their vote. It just takes 12. Just takes 12. The Daily Beast. It's not too late for electors to change history. Yeah, you can alter the results of the election, electors. All of them were saying that. They were being encouraged to do that by all of these talking heads, all these commentators. None of them got charged with felonies. No, the Saul Alinsky tactics. Yeah, deny the results of the election if your guy loses, and then go and attack the opposition, persecute the opposition. You see why it was so important for Obama to weaponize the deep state, the audacity of some of these lies. Listen to one more. This is from John Kerry. I think this is from a week or two ago, clip 11.
I just don't agree with your facts, which began with the presentation of one of the most outrageously persistent lies that I hear, which is this private jet. We don't own a private jet. I don't own a private jet. I personally have never owned a private jet. And obviously, it's pretty stupid to talk about coming in a private jet from the State Department up here.
His wife is one of the richest women in the world, and she owns the Gulfstream. And he's been on it dozens and dozens and dozens of times. I don't own a private jet. We don't own a private jet. He just says it right to your face. Right. I guess that's some kind of congressional testimony. Or maybe before the UN, I don't know. But he just lies. They all do. The father of read John 8 in verse 44, where it speaks of the devil, who is the god of this world, 2 Corinthians 4:4. It says here that he's the father of lies, of murder, and that there's no truth. There's absolutely no truth in him. When we come back, we'll conclude today's show with a short Bible study, continuing on with the same subject that we've been getting into earlier this week. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to submit some feedback to the show, you can write to us, td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The developed nations have made awesome progress. They have produced a highly mechanized world, providing every luxury, modern convenience, and means of pleasure. Yet they are cursed with crime, violence, injustice, sickness and disease, broken homes and families. At the same time, more than one half the world is living in illiteracy, abject poverty, filth and squalor. Violence and destruction are rapidly multiplying. Many ask, why, if God exists, does he allow so much violence and human suffering? To understand the reason behind this astonishing paradox, request a complimentary copy of Mystery of the Ages. We were born into this 20th century world as it is. We take it for granted, but we can't explain it. It's like viewing a movie at a point already near the end. We see what is occurring at that point, but not having seen it from the beginning and not knowing how events developed to the point of viewing, we simply cannot understand what we are seeing. Mystery of the Ages transports you back to the beginning of the movie, to the foundation of this present evil world. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
This week we've been talking about a psalm of remembrance, Psalm 78. Under one of my Bibles, it has the subtitle or the title, God's Guidance of His People. God guiding His family. That's what this psalm is about. The first few verses, we read those yesterday, it talks about the importance of teaching our children their history, the history of God's miracle-making power to guide His people. Psalm 78, verse 1, it says, "Give ear, O my people, to my law. Incline your ears to the words of my mouth. I will open my mouth in a parable. I will utter dark sayings of old, which we have heard and known, and our fathers have told us." Verse 4, it says, "We will not hide them from their children, showing to the generation to come the praises of the Eternal and His strength and His wonderful works that He has done." Show to the generations to come the praises of God and His strength and His wonderful works. I mean, they had to spend a lot of time talking about this in the Old Testament time period, back in the days of ancient Israel. They didn't have all the books. They had a few parchments, as I said yesterday, but a lot of it was passed along just orally, verbally. We've got to spend time, not just with reading and study today, but we've got to give the spirit of Ephesians 3 in verse 9 to dispense with this message, starting first in our own families. Herbert Armstrong said about the young people in the church and all these youth programs that he established. He said here, although Satan is going to influence your children almost from birth toward his selfish and rebellious attitude, you may counteract this by your teaching your children the truth about God. You have to counteract Satan's influence to teach the truth, to teach our children the truth about God. It says here, and when sufficiently adult, they will be called. None of this is true of children outside truly converted parents. You see, as I said in the first segment, you see how important it is for the devil, through his institutions, to educate your children, to fill their minds with filth, to pull them farther and farther away from parental influence, and to brainwash them. They're the future foot soldiers in the communist movement. That's what a lot of universities are churning out by the tens of thousands. Good, faithful communists, radicals. Verse 5, it says, "For he established testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, which he commanded our fathers, that they should make them known to their children." Make them known to their children. It says in verse 6 that the generation to come might know them, even the children which should be born, who should arise and declare them to their children. See, pass it right on down, like 2 Timothy 2, verses 1 and 2 says. Go out, Paul said to Timothy, go out, find some disciples and teach them, and then teach them to teach others. Pass it on down. It says that they might set their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but keep his commandments. We live in a time where so many people have forgotten. They've forgotten their God. They've forgotten the history of their own nation. Glorious history that we should be reminding our children and our grandchildren of. Instead, so many people want to just blot it out. That's the goal of the communist infiltration. Just blot out even the name of Israel. They hate all things associated with Israel, whether it's the United States, Britain. Verse 8, it says, and might not be as their fathers, a stubborn and rebellious generation, a generation that set not their heart right, and whose spirit was not steadfast with God. Verse 10 says, they kept not the covenant of God, and refused to walk in his law. Verse 11, and they forgot his works, and his wonders, that he might show them, or that he had showed them. Verse 12, marvelous things did he in the sight of their fathers, in the land of Egypt, in the field of Zoan. All of these fantastic miracles. Miracles from God. We had that as a discussion point the other night during fellowship. And it was inspiring. I think I mentioned this Monday. But it was just inspiring to hear all of these young people in God's family, witnesses of tremendous miracles in their own lives, in their families. It says here with respect to ancient Israel, verse 13, he divided the sea, and he caused them to pass through, and he made the waters to stand as an heap. Verse 14, in the daytime also he led them with a cloud, and all the night, it says, with the light of fire. He clave the rocks in the wilderness, and he gave them drink as out of the great depths. Verse 16, he brought streams also out of the rock, and caused waters to run down like rivers. How can you forget these stunning displays of God's mighty power? Well, there's so many people today that don't even believe those miracles happened. We're so far removed from God. We're so attached to the material things of this world that all we can really believe in or think about is what's just right in front of your face, like this microphone. Just totally myopic in our thinking. No vision whatsoever. No appreciation of history. No appreciation of God's miraculous involvement in that history. Verse 19 of Ephesians 1, let me just read this to you. And what is the exceeding greatness of his power to usward who believe, according to the working of his mighty power? God has mighty power. He has awesome ability to intervene in our lives. Are we tapping into that power supply? Are we going to God and praying earnestly for more of God's spirit, more of his power, more of his thinking, more of his love, his joy, his goodness, his meekness, his temperance, his faith? Fruits. Those are fruits of the Holy Spirit. That's what we need to empower our lives. Read the last four verses of Isaiah 40. We read them coming into this camp at one of our orientations. It says over there that God will give strength to the weary. God will give us safety and protection. God will heal us. God empowers his family if we look to him, if we trust him. Verse 17, it says, and they send yet more. All these miraculous displays. And what happened anciently? It says, and they sinned yet more against him by provoking the Most High in the wilderness. They, instead of believing God, instead of trusting in God, they provoked him to wrath. And they tempted God in their hearts by asking for meat for their lust. Yea, they spoke against God They said, "Can God furnish a table in the wilderness? Behold, he smote the rock, and the waters gushed out, and the streams overflowed. Can he give bread also? Can he provide flesh for his people?" God did all those things. Therefore, the Lord heard this and was wroth. So a fire was kindled against Jacob, and anger also came up against Israel, because they believed not in God and trusted not in his salvation. You can believe God. He's reliable. You can trust him. Read Hebrews 11, verse 1 and verse 6. Read about faith, what it means to walk by faith and to diligently seek God. God rewards those who diligently go after him, who diligently seek him, his input, his guidance. A psalm about God's guidance, God's miraculous hand. God says, remember this history and teach it to your children. This is what God wants of you. This is what God wants of your young people, your children. This is what he wants of the young people at this camp. To just learn to trust him, to look to him, to rely upon him for guidance, for direction. We don't know the way to go. Jeremiah 10, verses 23 and 24. We don't know how to mark out our journey or to go along according to the right path. We need God to show us. We need God to guide our steps. We need the perfect example of Jesus Christ. We need his faith in us. Verse 23, it says, "Though he had commanded the clouds from above and opened the doors of heaven, he had rained down manna upon them to eat and had given them of the corn of heaven. Man did eat angels' food. He sent them meat to the full." This is it. Now, you know what the Israelites eventually did with this tremendous miracle, this daily bread from heaven, this daily manna. They started to complain and criticize God and say, "Well, we don't have the flesh, the meat, like we did in Egypt." And God gave them that to the point where they got so sick to their stomachs, even as they were devouring the flesh. But God was giving them food daily, supernaturally. He was raining it from heaven. And the way God views that, he calls it angels' food. He calls it corn from heaven. They looked down on that. They were unthankful. They weren't grateful for this stunning display of awesome power. Of course, you can read and study into John 6 and see how the lesson is there for us today. I mean, every day God will rain manna from heaven in the spiritual sense, but only if we're really going out and gathering it up, really drawing near to God with our prayers and with our Bible study. Verse 26, it says, "He caused an east wind to blow in the heaven, and by his power he brought in the south wind. He rained flesh also upon them as dust, and feathered fowls like as the sand of the sea. And he let it fall in the midst of their camp, round about their habitation. So they did eat and were filled, and he gave them their own desire. They were not estranged from their lust, but while their meat was yet in their mouths, the wrath of God came upon them and slew the fattest of them, and smote down the chosen men of Israel. For all this they sinned still, and believed not for his wondrous works." Wondrous works, they're all around us. And God says here in this psalm that we better appreciate them, we better cherish them, we better hold on to them, this history, this relationship with God, or else he takes it all away. Look at what he's taking away from our nations. Look at the curses that are setting in the United States, in Britain. It's important to hold on to these wondrous works, to this wonderful truth, to know the truth, as Mr. Armstrong said, to be able to know the truth about God and to teach that truth to our children. That's all we have time for on today's show. Perhaps tomorrow we can get through a good bit more of this psalm. It's a fairly long one, but a really positive, encouraging message through and through. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. If you want to email the show, you can reach us at td@thetrumpet.com. www.thepleadeal.com. Thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.